said.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta...
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
We are back. This is Sportsaholics, episode number 154, the Brian Urlacher episode. The Bears, I mean, I feel so sorry for you Bears fans because you're passionate. You had that little reality show on ESPN2 last year that was interesting. Definitely diehard fans. Cold weather. You guys are still out there watching crap Trubisky or local guy. But, yeah, so... Brian Urlacher coming out, that was that music, that was Toots and the Maytals, 54-46. Just that song actually was voted the best reggae song of all time against Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, the Wailers, all that. That was voted number one song. It's about Toots Hibbert, the lead singer. And a lot of you guys, if you're in your 30s, 40s, and you grew up with Sublime kind of playing in the background of your youth, they sampled that song, so you might remember it from that. But he got arrested for weed in Jamaica in like 1965, and so 64-46, or I'm sorry, 54-46 was his number in prison. So that's what the whole song's about. But great band. I've seen them 3 or 4 or 5 times over the years in Hollywood at the old House of Blues that's torn down now. Rest in peace. Fantastic venue. Great memories there. And then at the Roxy a couple times. And then years ago in Lawrence, Kansas at the Bottleneck, which was I think that was like 2002, something like that, for, you know, $14, like 300 people packed in, jammed into a shoebox. But definitely check them out. Luckily, Mr. Hibbert, Toots himself, is still alive. I mean, I can only guess he's 80, but still just throws it out there, James Brown style on stage. A good performance. Now, this is based off of something I saw 6 years ago, but I'm assuming he's still as passionate as ever with the music. So if you get the opportunity, definitely go see them, Toots and the Maytals. But as far as Brian Urlacher goes, he was, you know, obviously the face of the Bears for a generation. Went to college in New Mexico and was a weird, in high school, just kind of did everything, kind of a player, but they moved him to the safety and was a top draft pick, I think 2000. Just retired in 2012. That's what kind of blew me away. I was like, man, he's already been gone 5 years. He just actually 2 weeks ago became eligible for the Hall of Fame. I'm sure he'll get it. I don't know. The NFL, the Hall of Fame's a little bit different than baseball. But, just last month got nominated. Defensive Player of the Year in 2005. We all remember the Super Bowl 2006. That was kind of the height of his career. Brian Urlacher, episode number 54, number 54. Legend from the Chicago Bears. Okay, so this week we have on Todd Monson from BigRedFury.com talk about college football, Nebraska. As we recorded the interview, it was right before Scott Frost had gotten hired. He knew that he was getting hired, or he knew a guy who knew a guy. I mean, so he was like 98% sure it was happening. But we don't actually cover that in the interview, but specifically. But just Todd wrote a great article. You can find it at BigRedFury.com. Just kind of detailing the rise and the fall of Nebraska and just kind of how painful it is compared to how incredible it used to be, just to go to Nebraska games. And then after that, we'll have on a good friend of the show, Davey Wester, who just arrived in Washington for a 2-week tour all around that side of the state that you guys should definitely check out. But another thing, it's like you get old when you remember very vividly certain events. And in our intro, we have the Mike Gundy rant. I mean, and we missed the exact anniversary. It was back in September, but the I'm a man, I'm 40. And it was after a local reporter went after their quarterback at the time, Bobby Reed, who years later said that he felt that the whole thing was just a show, that he wasn't necessarily even favored while practicing and didn't get to play that much anyway. And so he was kind of surprised that this happened 10 years ago.
I'm going to talk about this article right here. If anybody hasn't read this article, I don't read it. This was brought to me by a mother of children. I think this is worth reading.
A mother of children.
This article.
What?
3/4 of this is inaccurate. It's fiction. And this article embarrasses me, but you haven't had that. But someday you will. And when your child comes home, you'll understand. If you want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, you go after one that doesn't do the right things. You don't downgrade him because he does everything right and may not play as well on Saturday. And you let us make that decision. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me. About guys that don't do things right.
One more time. I just got to run it
back. The ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
There it is.
I'm not
a
kid.
So now he's 50 and he's rocking a mullet in Oklahoma State year after year. I feel bad for you pokies out there because you've got the talent and you just never seem to have that miracle season where you get the 2 wins over, they might not even be upset. Maybe it's you avoid the upset and you get a big victory. You're always so close, but yet so far away. But while we're on football, I guess we'll get into the old, that once was a rivalry, good old Big 8 days, the Nebraska-Oklahoma State game. But when we come back, we'll be with Todd Munson talking a little Nebraska football, some Dodgers baseball, BigRedFury.com. You can get that article. And then also real quick, guys, go to regrained.com for delicious snack energy bar thing. I don't know how to describe them, but they are delicious and good for you. So order them and they support the show. Also go to unionpresskc.com if you guys need any shirts printed up, any jerseys, family reunion, softball, baseball, basketball, anything like that, they'll take care of you. And if you're in Southern California, like you guys saw last week, I was. And where was I eating? At Don Carlos Taco Shop on Pearl Street, kitty catty corner from the world famous Comedy Store. So if you're in San Diego, La Jolla, that area, go to Don Carlos Taco Shop. Don Carlos Taco Shop on Pearl Street in La Jolla. Very delicious. You can follow him also on Twitter at Eat a Burrito and also on Instagram at Eat a Burrito. And when we're back, Todd Munson, ladies and gentlemen.
Nebraska, right on, right on. Four nights forgotten seem to please those at ease across Nebraska. happy with their saddles on the floor. And 5 nights of driving through the clouds, their faith abounds across Nebraska. Lightning flashing brightly from their sword.
Okay, we are back as promised with Todd Munson from BigRedFury.com. You can follow him on Twitter at TheMunson, TheMunson. Todd, how are you doing, man? I mean, you're a diehard Dodgers fan, so I know you had a rough October, and you are from Nebraska and a diehard football Cornhuskers fan, so I know.
Yeah, those are my two favorite teams. I don't venture out of the Huskers or the Dodgers, so I kind of channel all my sports obsession just to those two teams. So October is actually fun for the Dodgers because they ended the month with a Halloween game 6 win, but it was the next day when we were back at the stadium for game 7 for some November baseball for the first time ever. That was awful.
That actually reminded me of the wild card game, the A's, the infamous A's Royals game from 2014. So the Royals hadn't had an October baseball game in 30 years, and everyone has these rally towels, and it's like, you know, October fever and all this October stuff. Well, the game was played on like September 30th or what, you know, the last day of September. And luckily it took the 11th inning, I think, finally, until it hit October 1st. And at that point I just cheered. I'm like, it's October baseball. And it got everyone all riled up. I'm like, don't be fooled. I mean, technically it's the postseason, but it is not October baseball. But, so October, we'll get into the Dodgers. I think second half, I kind of want to focus on the football aspect, because I fell in love with Nebraska football as a kid. I'm in my mid 30s. So I was a young kid when I remember the 94 season, the 95. In fact, in 94, went up and watched KU get beat like a drum in Lincoln, Nebraska.
And that was supposed to be a good game too, because you guys had Glenn Mason as a coach.
It was not. I want to say that KU scored 9 points, I think.
That sounds right, without even looking at it.
And, you know, so growing up, Nebraska dominated, and I would always talk – you'd always hear, like, Oklahoma used to be good. And when I was a kid, Oklahoma was not good at all for years and years. And you could still argue that they're not great, having really not done anything. Well, I mean, I guess that's why Stoops is gone now. But But what's that been like? Because in Nebraska, as soon as you enter the western part of Iowa and northern Kansas, like, you start seeing Nebraska Cornhusker stuff in other states. So what's it been like with this? It's been kind of like a slow crumbling castle, really, over the last.
That's a great way to put it. It's almost like a sandcastle that's just like getting roughed up a little bit by the rising tide. And then just a rogue wave comes in and sweeps it out. And
which coach was that rogue wave? I mean, there's been several rogue waves, I feel like.
Yeah, but it was weird, too. Just when the season started out, it's like, okay, they had a close call. They started the season with a close call against Arkansas State. Like, they had to do, like, a goal line stand to keep the game from going overtime. And you're like, okay, new defensive coordinator. It's cool. They'll get worked out. Oregon, they're down, but I think it was like 42-14 at halftime, maybe 42-21. Almost come back to tie it up, but you know, it's like you're like kind of like buckle up. It's gonna be a weird season, and then just the whole roller coaster just flew off the rails. You know, it was like disaster at Adventureland.
So it sounds like this is something that's been building within the program for, you know, for years now. So is it a accumulation of bad recruiting and coaching, or just a tough schedule, or just some sort of mixture of all three that's kind of led to this?
I think it's a mixture of all three, because they had a run. They played Wisconsin and Ohio State back to back, and then they did Penn State a couple weeks later. And at the start of the season, you look at the schedule, it's like, okay, the reality is they're not going to get through this undefeated, but you know, you think they have a chance to like knock off one of them, and Wisconsin just decimated them in the first or the second half with just runs up the gut. Like they, I think Nebraska touched the ball in the fourth quarter, like had like two possessions. They both lasted under a minute, but it was just, they just exposed every weakness of the team from the defensive line to the offensive line. Like quarterback with new guy Tanner Lee, he was totally immobile. So he had no scrambling ability, and just the amount, like, he was getting sacked 6-7 times a game. And I think a big part of it too, just to get back to your question, is Mike Riley, for as great of a guy he was like the CEO type of coach, where okay. He wasn't really hands-on. It was, you know, Danny Langsdorf ran the offense, new guy Bob Diaco ran the defense, and he was just there on the sidelines looking like your chilly grandpa in a hoodie, you know. And like, you know, he was definitely focused and a competitor, but he never showed that sideline kind of scowl, like not even like the tiniest percentage of what Bo Pelini had. So you're like, oh great, like Mr. Rogers is really gonna yell at these players.
Maybe, yeah, it's like he just was on Xanax or something. Like you're like, exactly. Is this not hurting you? I mean, this is painful.
No, and he, you know, it was just never anything. Like tap a guy in the back of the head or something, and then it was during the Iowa game this last week on Black Friday. Iowa scored again, like second consecutive possession. It's like, Mike Riley's getting mad. He just unwrapped another piece of Orbit's gum, you know, like that's like,
watch out, he's not reading the joke this time that came with the gum, you know, he's pissed.
Yeah,
well, but okay, then
and then just recruiting wise they've got a lot of great athletes, but I don't know that they really got a bunch of guys who believe that they're playing for a team or really recognize sort of what the legacy of Nebraska is. And it seems that the kind of the way they were brought in was like, oh, we're going to play for this pro coach, whatever, get ready for the NFL, and then we can just kind of goof off and do whatever we want. And one thing that I thought was a real weird sticking point at the beginning of the season, this would have been like 2 weeks into fall camp, Mike Riley sends out this tweet like, oh, the guys have been working so good, it's time to like give them a nice little reward. It was Kendrick Lamar was playing in Lincoln that night, and he bought tickets for the whole team.
Okay.
And let him take a Saturday off of practice. And I'm like, oh, that's not going to come back to bite him. And sure enough, it's like the team just plays like,
I mean,
crap.
I kind of like that move. It's kind of like, you know, I'm one with the players and it's not all, you know. But yeah, as a fan, you're thinking like, what are you talking about? Saturdays are for 3-a-days.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, Coach Grandpa just gave us Kendrick tickets. You know, it's like, I can't think of any coach who'd ever do that, you know. Like the craziest Tom Osborne would get is he'd let players go hunt on his land on Sundays if they were hunters, you know. He'd like,
oh, that's hilarious.
Give keys to the gate to the ranch he had or whatever.
Well, just to put it in perspective, I mean, they're 4-8 right now, I believe.
Yeah,
and so this will be the third time in the last 48 or 49 seasons that they have not gone to a bowl game. I mean, that's dominance over decades and decades.
This is the worst Husker team in our lifetime. So, like, my low point of the season was when they played Minnesota, and it was close at halftime. I think Nebraska was winning a touchdown. I forget what the score was. And then Minnesota just ran a train on them in the second half. And I've never seen a team just flat out quit like I had. It was the weirdest thing. I'm like, of all the games to be depressed about, it was Minnesota that got me the worst.
Yeah, because you're like, it's Minnesota, you know, and they got that
exactly.
They got that stupid new row the boat head coach.
Oh, that guy's such a dork. He was just doing that on the sidelines the whole game and like running out there every chance he got. And like,
yeah,
Mike Riley just, you know, with his hands in his pocket wearing two hoodies because it was cold.
Just to kind of blow your mind, next year is going to be the 20th anniversary of Tom Osborne's last season. How does that settle into your mind?
It was actually this year.
Or this year was. Okay.
This year, yeah.
Oh, you're right. You're right. 97. Okay, 98.
Yeah, no, 98, the
98 was Solich's. That's
Solich,
right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. But no, they did a big like 20th anniversary thing this year, and Grant Wistrom led the team out of the tunnel and stuff and gave them the pep talk. And so many of those guys are just like, none of these guys would have been starters back in our time, just with how soft they are.
Yeah.
And everything. And it's weird because after this year, there's nothing left to celebrate unless you wait, what would it be, like 2024 or something? Like, whatever, like, you do the 25th anniversary of 1994, but, I mean, they're done with celebrating anniversaries unless they want to go every 5 years. So that's kind of
sad. And how old do you think he is right now, too?
Osmond?
Yeah.
He's pushing 80. He's like 78, 79. And he's in pretty good shape. So, all things considered. But, yeah, he's done as far as coaching. But I think he'll be there a little bit watching practice if Scott Frost ends up becoming a coach. So, show up with his lawn chair and just sit somewhere on the practice field out of the way.
Well, it's great. Okay, so and just to give you an idea of Osborne's dominance, like first of all, his last season in 97, he was 13-0. But just taking it from, we'll take it from the 92, 3, 4. His last 6, 7 years, he was 69 and 8. His last 7 seasons coaching. At Nebraska.
His big streak was 60-3. So those are his championship year, like the last 4 years, I think. So
and
there are a couple weird upsets in there, and they lost to my Florida State once. And
well, let's not forget that. Now was that Scott Frost off Davidson's toe catch at Missouri? Is that included? Was that what year did that take place?
That was 97, the Miracle Missouri. So.
Yes. Okay. So that was that helped contribute to that perfect 13.
Yeah, and that was the first time a team ever got bumped out because Nebraska was number one going in that game, and even though they won in overtime, they fell down to 2 or 3. They got voted out of the number one spot by the AP and the coaches poll, and they kind of had their backs against the wall the whole season after that with Michigan in the number one spot. That was a big controversy, if you remember, because it was. Michigan got to play Washington State in the Rose Bowl, and Nebraska had to play Tennessee with Peyton Manning, and Nebraska just destroyed him. And Scott Frost, after the game, used his post-game interview to make a stump speech for Osborne being deserving of the national championship.
Is there a deep love for Scott Frost in Nebraska still? I mean, is that...
Well, what's funny is the deep love has come on since Scott Frost established himself as a successful coach. Because back then when he was on the team, the honest answer is people really didn't like him because he was replacing Tommy Frazier. He was originally, he chose Stanford over Nebraska because he was going to be a quarterback under Bill Walsh. And he's such a tremendous athlete that he played safety his true freshman year. That just like, we got to get you out on the field. And that's why he played in the NFL. And then Bill Walsh retired, so Scott Frost transferred back. And fans are really frosty to him, as well as the team, because they're like, oh, who's this guy who's too good for us? He's here now. And when he was on the scout team the year he transferred over in 96 or 95, they just beat the crap out of him on the scout team.
Was that like Winstrom and all those guys back?
Yeah, it was all those guys, the Peter brothers, everybody that just lit him up there. And he never backed down. He just kept popping back up. And then when he was a starter, one of their first games, that road game against Arizona that had Jake Plummer and Pat Tillman and Isaiah Mustafa, the Old Spice guy on the Arizona Sun Devils. And they went to Tempe and played a night game. Got beat 19-0, and Scott was sacked for safeties twice, and that really soured people. It was really weird that people were just such jerks to him. And what's going to be funny?
Yeah, because he's in Nebraska. Where's Wood River, Nebraska? That's where he's from.
Wood River is about 20 miles from my hometown. So I would Scott's a couple years older than me, but I would still frequently see him on weekends strolling the Conestoga Mall in Wood River Letterman's jacket.
Oh, and, man, with like a 93 on the side.
She worked at TCBY Yogurt, and he would always go in. That was like the end of his trip to the big city of Grand Island, my hometown, was stopping at TCBY and flirting with my kindergarten girlfriend.
There you go. Yogurt.
So, yeah, it was, no, he was, Wood River's just super tiny. I think it's maybe 2,000 people, but the crazy thing is his mom was an Olympic shot putter in 1972. She went to the Olympics, and she was his quarterback coach, and his dad was the head coach at the Wood River. So as a quarterback, he had a really funny throwing motion as if he was throwing a shot put, but he got the ball there, you know.
And obviously tough as nails, just like moonlighted as a safety.
Yeah, no, because he played like 5, 6 years in the NFL as a safety. So that was pretty – because he's dude's an athlete, you know. So it's... like state champion discus thrower, and I think he did well in the shot put. But it was funny, like Nebraska every summer does like the Nebraska State Games, like they call it the Cornhusker State Games, and it's like the state Olympics. And his mom and Scott and his dad all did like the discus and shot put and just dominated. They've all won gold medals in their categories.
That's hilarious. And in 75 and older, the Frosts again dominate this year.
Yeah.
So what's the deal? Is he going to go back to Wood River, buy a huge 1,000-acre ranch and be the head coach in Nebraska? Is that something that's going to happen?
Yeah, I think it's a done deal. The new athletic director, Bill Moos, he's a pretty cool guy. Like, have you seen any of his interviews with the media or anything?
No,
I'm obsessed. But he's like just a straight up like Midwestern dude who happened to live in Washington State. He was the athletic director at Washington State. And yeah, the guy's just a straight shooter. Like, he did a press conference the day Mike Riley was let go that they broadcast on the Big Ten Network. And he was just like, reporters asked him a question, and he answered. He's like, look, I've got 6 coaching candidates, been vetting them. We've done things, and even admitted, like, they reached out to Chip Kelly, saw it was going to be a good fit. And then somebody asked him about Brett Bielema from Arkansas. He's like, yeah, I don't know anything about him. So you're like, okay, you just.
So he's like, so he's probably not in contention.
Yeah. And then he got tripped up a little bit when one of the reporters asked him if he met with Scott Frost in Philadelphia, because Central Florida played Temple at Philly the same weekend Nebraska went to play Penn State. And he's like, no. He's like, well, why didn't you travel with the team? You were there later. And he's like, oh, my wife and I were closing the deal on our condo.
Oh, right.
I traveled That's separately. Right. I don't have a reason to be in Philadelphia, but I heard they have good sandwiches. Yeah. It was pretty funny how he got tripped up. And then, without going into details, I have I got legit inside info from a friend whose brother coached with Scott at Oregon. And he said earlier this week it was a fully done deal.
Okay.
So they just waited for him to play out the championship game tomorrow, and then they'll make the announcement. Nebraska's been really respectful of his wishes that way, because it sounded like he didn't want to make a big deal of it until after the championship game.
Okay. So now it's assuming Coach Frost is now behind the wheel of the football program. Where do you see that going? Is he now bringing in more Florida recruits and that sort of thing, or – Why has he been so successful, like, so quickly? I mean, he turned – I think it was like a 9-win flip, I think. They went from something like that.
Part of it is he's just a good coach. Like, he – you know, he went up with Bill Walsh, Tom Osborne, went to the pros with Bill Belichick, and who's the tuna guy?
Parcells,
yeah. He went with those guys, and then – he went through the whole graduate assistant program. He's at Northern Iowa, then Kansas State under Bill Snyder. He was like an assistant coach. And then he spent so much time at Oregon first as a receivers coach and then as the offensive coordinator for the last year or two. And the guy just knows how to coach. Like, what's going to be funny is when he comes in, no matter who he has as recruits, those guys who are there now are going to like finally realize what football practice is all about. Like, it's going to be, you guys go run stairs, come back when you're done, and then we'll start practice. Like, he's going to bring it back to the level of how it was in Osborne, where in the middle of the week, you've got good against good going at it full speed, and the games were the relaxing part. Like, that's what, like,
Peter
Brothers and the Grant Wistroms and stuff, they're like, no, our practices were hard. It was the game was the easy part. Like, we got to the game, we got to Saturday, it's like, okay, we can relax and just kill these guys.
So. And there's something to that, and that's just building that level of competition. That's the best college coaches do that, you know, just pit the best players against each other. Because when you roll out against Minnesota or Illinois, you're like, whew, okay, this is going to it's like a scout team.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it's like. In the 95 Fiesta Bowl against Florida, Nebraska's first run was just a little dive up the gut, and I forget which offensive lineman had said it in an interview I heard on a podcast recently, but he was like, yeah, we called that play, and it was really just for the guys on the line to get a taste of what they were going up against. And then, like, yeah, first play of the game, we shoved him off the line 3 yards. We're like, yeah, there's no way we're not winning this game. You know, they're just like,
like, this is gonna, like, be great, we're breaking records
for, like, a simple little dive play. You know, it's like, you're done. It was the first play of the game, and we're tossing you around. And So, yeah, that, like, those guys are going to just be in a world of pain. So it's going to be, I think Nebraska might have a few transfers and stuff, but the guys who stick around are going to be much, much better next year. So
maybe bring in a couple guys from UCF.
Yeah, we'll do that probably. And then it's open season for transfers from Ole Miss now. That was news today when they got hit with the sanctions. Like, all the upcoming seniors are allowed to transfer without losing eligibility, and they don't need permission from the school. So they might cherry pick some there. And then what's crazy is Nebraska, this is back in the Bo Pelini era, like at the tail end of it, they were recruiting this quarterback who ended up going to Oregon, and I forget what his name is, but he left Oregon and is playing at a junior college now and is ready to go back to Division One. And he was saying a Scott Frost offered him, he'd be a Husker in a heartbeat. And the guy's like apparently legit.
Like just Cam Newton Jr. or something like that?
Yeah, basically. And it was like he kind of had a falling out with the new coaching staff and transferred. And then that was that. So after Scott left. But he was like Scott's prize recruit from that year. I'm just blanking on his name. But dude's a speedster who can just throw it. So good. You're like the real Johnny Utah. Like Taylor Martinez 2.0.
But. Taylor Martinez. Oh, nice. There you go. Again, listeners, if you go to bigredfury.com, or you can follow Todd on Twitter at the Munson, M-U-N-S-O-N. And he'll have a brand new article kind of covering a little bit of the stuff we've talked about and go much more in depth with it. And then will you have a link to that up on your Twitter?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll share it out because it's all just basically just about done with it. But it's like the worst thing I've ever had to write. So it's like this November was the worst sports month of my life. So,
well, you know what? You got to be like lower than low before you really appreciate the good times. And I got a feeling that there's going to be some good times coming back around. I mean, it's an atmosphere, that's really up there as one of the elite experiences in college football. When you go to a Nebraska game, I mean, everyone is just all smile. Well, I mean, okay. And this is coming from 20 years ago when they were national champion contenders, all smiles, thousands of barbecue grills. I recently, three years ago, took a tour of the stadium and the facilities. It was incredible. All the remodeling they've done. But I thought it was very appropriate because I went through the big Hall of Fame walk and like the tour.
Yeah.
You walk into the last room and like all this big music plays.
The Heisman trophies come out from behind the
wall. The Heisman trophy. There's supposed to be like three Heisman trophies, which, but it was broken. So we walk out and we were like, nothing really happened. She goes, wait, the trophies didn't come up? And I'm like, nah, it was just nothing happened. She goes, oh, shoot, it's broke again. And I was like, that's
so perfect.
I was like, that's
it's really cool, but it is kind of like it's a small world thing from Disneyland.
Yeah, like this is such how appropriate that you can't even display the Heisman trophies properly anymore up there. Well, okay, let's switch gears back to baseball then. So, listeners, I was lucky enough to join Todd kind of pregame style during the Royals Dodgers series this past summer in July, and had a great time. I think we got in there like an hour and a half, something like that, before first pitch, and got really close to the players, got some like Chesler Cuthbert pictures, because they were just warming up, and just had a great time. And I believe it's like episode 140, I think, we talk about Dodgers and midseason predictions and everything else. And you liked how they were going, and they hadn't hit that 17 game losing streak or whatever the hell that was.
That was just awful.
But
that was fun though to get through it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, okay, everyone's going through a slump, get that out of the way. Yeah. And it ended up turning out to be one of those things where just get it out of the way. And they bring in Darvish from Texas, and the playoffs start. You go into Arizona, against the Diamondbacks, who had picked up JD Martinez. He was firing on all cylinders. Very offensively potent team, decent pitching staff. What was that series like? Was there any concern?
The Arizona series, up until you found out Corey Seager wasn't going to be playing against the Cubs, was the thing I was most worried about, just because of how dominant Arizona can be when they're hitting all cylinders. And I was there for like JD Martinez's 4-home run game. And you're just like, this guy's a monster. And
right.
I remember getting argued with a friend because he's like, we saw history. I'm like, I don't care. Like, wrong player. Big deal.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah. Wrong team, buddy.
Like, looked it up afterwards, like just how rare it was. And you're like, oh, wow. Okay. It doesn't happen. You know, it's like the odds of seeing a perfect game.
Well, speaking of rare, Kershaw during one of those Royals games struck out 10 Royals batters without throwing 100 pitches, which had never happened in a Major League Baseball game. I was like, oh, perfect. Good. At least we saw some history here. Thank you.
Yeah. But in that very first game when Justin Turner homered in the first inning, that just let up kind of like the biggest sigh of relief in the stadium. You're like, all right, these guys got their mojo.
Yeah. Okay. And then, it's back.
Yeah, and then third game against Arizona, Darvish against Greinke. A little worried, but it was like Bellinger homered, and everybody's contributing, and then closed him out with a sweep, and then...
Yeah, nice 3-0 sweep.
That was a solid sweep. Like, Arizona didn't even threaten. I think they scored 3 or 4 runs that whole series, and they're all solo home runs, which kind of ended up becoming the Dodgers' strategy a little bit with their pitching. Is that because like Kershaw got torched for more home runs ever than in his life, but it's like, yeah, we'll just give you a chance. And because they were just so aggressive with their pitching, like you get a solo home run, good job, but you know, we're not letting anybody on base. So yeah, that was good that way. And then Seager was out for the Cubs, but yes. Then Charlie Culberson came in and just became the hero.
Like, that guy's never gonna have to fight at
the stadium in his life. It's like, hey, buddy, you played in the minors all the way up until September this year, and we're going to need you to start against the Cubs in the playoffs. And he totally did it. Like, in the year before, he hit the Dodgers' last home game of the season, which was Vin's last home game. He hit the walk-off home run in the 10th inning.
That's right. He was the guy. Game. Like, Vin's last call is this walk-off home run from Charlie Culberson.
And, like, Charlie, they did, like, on the backstage Dodgers, they did a segment about him in the playoffs, and it was like, he had his bat signed by Vin, the bat he used, and he was so afraid to ask because he was like such like a minor player. He's like, Vin wouldn't even know who I am. Why would I ask him?
Oh, absolutely, and, Charlie. Bring it on in.
Yeah, no, he's like, he got his bat signed. And then, yeah, he made the final out too against the Cubs in that in game 4 in Chicago. It's like, dude's awesome. So,
yeah, it's kind of cool because, I mean, at this point, The Dodgers win game 1, they win game 2, 4-1, win game 3. So, I mean, they start off winning 6 in a row.
Yeah.
Before they finally lose game 4.
And that was to be expected. Like, it was just like, okay, they got to lose one. And then that was, who pitched that night? It was, it was Alex Wood. And it was like the Dodgers put out their lineup of, like, give everybody a night off. I remember that. It was because they still weren't out of the game the whole time. It was just like, man, if you guys would have, like, put in some other play, like, because it was Chase Utley started instead of Logan Forsythe. They shuffled around the outfield a little bit. And they had Grant, that was one of the games that Yasmani Grandal started instead of Austin Barnes. It's like, you guys could have swept the Cubs, you know, instead it was like, kind of gave everybody a night off and then reset the deck for Kershaw for game 5. And that was so good to see Kershaw close out the Cubs in Chicago from the year before when he got rocked out there.
Yeah, and it kind of, I think this year finally put to bed all the Kershaw can't pitch. They had that in the playoffs. They had that stupid, like, his 7th inning ERA was, like, 29 at one point.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, okay, so we got rocked.
So much of that is because Don Mattingly wouldn't pull him. You know?
Yeah. Like... Yeah, so having approaching the World Series, the Dodgers at this point have really just steamrolled the Cubs because they end up the last game they went 11-1 to go to the World Series.
Yeah, Kike Hernandez thing was so perfect, and just I had a meeting to go to that afternoon, and it was it's like 20 minutes to get home or whatever. Check the score, and then I was kind of nervous about the game. It was the only game up until game 7 that I was really nervous about for some reason. And I'm like, I'm not checking the score until I get home, and I turn on the TV. And up in our backyard, we have basically like a treehouse with the TV. And
oh, that you were underselling. I mean, and it's a treehouse. It's a treehouse / incredible lounge with a refrigerator and a stationary bike you can ride and work out and watch TV. I mean, it that overlooks like a beautiful part of LA. Like you somehow found a beautiful part of LA to look at. Treehouse. But yes, continue.
Slash Treehouse, yeah. And I turned on the TV, and the first thing I saw was Kike high-fiving Jock Peterson back in the dugout. And we were just like, what happened? What happened? And then I checked my phone because I was so like in that weird like superstition thing where like I'm not looking at anything. I had like 30 text messages.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh my God, he just like slammed and did everything. It was just like, it was such like a party. And then what's great though is, you know, up in that little treehouse, we've got, you know, this view of LA, but we're kind of in a neighborhood with some homies. And as soon as the Dodgers clinched, you saw pro level fireworks going off in our neighborhood.
Pro level, I
like,
love that.
Real, like somebody was like saving these things up from the 4th of July. And then you can hear a few gunshots. So you're like, this is awesome. So,
they're like,
yeah,
what a perfect time to unload our firearms with all these fireworks going. So this is so you reached the World Series, and listeners, you got to understand, like, I moved to LA in 2004, and they and I remember just being excited following a team that was in the playoffs for the first time. But let me go through this. I mean, this is why to reach the World Series was so incredible and meant so much. One, it had been since 29 years, since 1988, but
yeah.
2004, lose to St. Louis. 2006, lose to the Mets in the NLDS. 2008, to the Cubs in the NLDS. They beat the Cubs and they lose
Phillies.
To the Phillies. That's right.
Yep.
Which I went to that game when Matt Stairs hit the home run.
Yeah. Wrecked Jonathan Brock.
It's 2009, they lose to the Phillies again.
Matt Stairs.
That was the okay. That's the I think one.
He did it twice, 2 years in a row.
Was it okay?
See, yeah, no, he owned Jonathan Broxton. So, yeah.
And then somehow they don't make the playoffs for like 4 years, and then so from 13 they lose to St. Louis in 13, in 14 lose to St. Louis, in 15 lose to the Mets, and then last year to the Cubs. So I mean, they've been in the playoffs. Let's see,
This is the fifth season in a row. So,
14 years, and this is the first, you know, 14 years since 2004 they've been to the playoffs, and then so that's why it meant so much. And So going into the playoffs, obviously they come in, they win game one at home. Then okay, game two, that's the game. That's the one for me. That's where they lost it. I mean,
that's kind of the consensus when you break it down of just like every fluke thing that could have happened. And my wife and I, we sold our game one tickets. Somebody had actually bought them the night the Dodgers closed out against the Diamondbacks. Because that was always our deal with having season tickets and going to the playoffs. It's if they get to the World Series, we have to sell one of the games. And that was the only playoff game the entire run that we missed. But it was a good transaction. But game two, it was like, it was so, like, the World Series is so much fun. It was like every level got more stressful and whatever, and the stakes were higher. But because it was Houston, there really weren't any Houston fans there, and you could tell who they were because they're all wearing orange. And like, Yankees would have been a more exciting series just for the marquee matchup, but not having to deal with Yankee fans was such a relief.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's like from our seats, everybody who is a regular, they're all there. Like, when we showed up for game two, got a ton of crap for selling our tickets, and the guy sits next to me, he's like, I knew you were gonna do that. I'm like, I've told you.
It's a community. I mean, look, listen, because when we went to the game, the Royals game, we sat down and Todd has introduced me to everyone. He's like, this lady's awesome down here. She was standing up cheering and then introduced me. Oh, man, I think was his name Mark? He was
Mark, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Mark, he's like, hey, you going to come tomorrow? I was like, yeah, I'm planning on it. He's like, you got a ticket? No. And he goes, here you go. Just hands me a ticket. Yeah. I was like, oh, let me pay you for it. He's like, no, don't worry about it. It's like, all right. I mean, that's the community. I show up with Todd and they're like, here's some tickets. Royals fan.
Yeah, no, it was all those same regulars. And so it was just so much fun that way. And it was almost eerie how well they were cruising. And then when Kenley gave out the tying home run, you're like, oh boy, this, because he came in the eighth inning, shut everybody down. You're like, all right, we just three more outs. And then it says suddenly it's high game, but then the Dodgers come back in the 10th. Well, Astros, who they bring in first? It wasn't Brandon McCarthy, because he came in at the end and just stank up the place. But the Dodgers battled back, and it was just from that fluke play of Kike being on second base, and the Astros tried the pickoff play that hit the ump right in the stomach.
Yeah, that was
when the ball would have gone to center field. That was a weird. That was the first time in my life I've ever seen that.
And it was what made it worse is they just kept talking about it on the play. I don't know if you watched the replay, but
I couldn't bring myself
at home. They were just like, I mean, that ball would have gone. I mean, at least to the wall. I mean, look, there's no.
Oh no, it was the center fielder was so far towards right center that Kike, if not to third, and that guy, Kike's deceptively fast.
I mean, he's an outfielder, so he's not slow.
Yeah, and he's got some stones to kind of make a player make a play. So,
it was just
such dumb luck. And afterwards, Kenley, and you can blame it on the slippery World Series balls or whatever, he's like, that was the one pitch I knew I hung, and the guy got it. So,
yeah. Well, and the fact that
it was
like
Josh Fields who came in the 10th. That's who it was. He gave up 2 solo home runs. They pulled him out. The Dodgers tied it, which was just a miracle. And then they were out of arms in the bullpen. So Brandon McCarthy, who had pitched since July, I'm like, dude, come in, and just served him right up. So
yeah, I mean, why they constantly were just pitching Jansen for 2 innings? I mean, just that. That in itself, and then just pulling Kershaw, Darvish really kind of, they should have started, in my opinion, just start Kershaw game 7. What are your thoughts on that?
I fully agree, especially when you find out after the fact that Carlos Beltran cracked the code on seeing Darvish tip his pitches. But just game 6 was Halloween. So that was our second World Series game we went to. And just sort of as a joke, we ended up bringing a 5-pound bag of Halloween candy. And so we were passing candy around.
That's a great joke that everyone enjoys.
Had actually a few kids in costume come up and get candy from us and stuff. And when the Dodgers pulled that one out, because that was a 2-1, 3-1 game that they won, there was such a sense of relief. And just it was some, everybody in our section stayed after for an hour. We were taking group photos and
plus it's game 6. So you're all right, there's a game 7 coming up. It's exciting.
Yeah. It's hey, tomorrow night, game 7, it's going to be awesome. And then I've never seen a Dodger crowd as amped as they were for game 7 as of any game. And everything was just incredible. Right before the players ran on the field, they cut to Puig and Justin Turner in the dugout, leading a chant. And you're oh my God, these guys are going to do it. We're going to see this happen. And it just imploded.
Oh, dude, that's...
That's the part where I've got... You know, I can now say I've seen the Dodgers lose the World Series in game 7. And I went to the 2002 Rose Bowl where the Huskers got destroyed by Miami. And so it's this weird distinction of getting to see your 2 most absolute favorite teams just get destroyed when they're playing for all the marbles. So it's just
That game 7,
a lot of really weird memories seeing the Dodgers go down like that.
That game 7 was one of the loneliest baseball games I've ever watched. Inning after inning, you're just wake up. Everyone's asleep. What's going on?
Well, the second inning or the first inning, the Astros, they get 2 runs. The Dodgers got the bases loaded right away with 1 out and nothing came across. And you're just oh, crap. Because once you get around third, you're okay, this is going to be another wild game, but Dodgers can do this. They've got the offense. And all their bats fell asleep. And you're just this is so miserable. And the only good thing was that the Astros scored their 5 runs in the first 2 innings. So, by the 7th inning stretch, you had accepted that the Dodgers weren't going to win. So you know, if it would have been Kansas City with Alex Gordon left at 3rd in the bottom of the 9th,
you're saying there's a chance, but
that I don't know how you would have gotten over that as a fan other than winning the World Series the next year, but just a heartbreaking down to the wire defeat like that versus we just got destroyed, so we gotta play 9 innings, whatever. But some of the regulars in our section left after the 8th inning or after the 7th inning.
Wow.
And it was great to see Andre Ethier hit that pinch hit home run. So
that's a nice send off because he's not coming back.
No, but it was great. Like, that guy's, you know, fan favorite.
Oh, no, like, and listeners, Ethier is one, yeah, like you said, fan favorite. I mean, he, I think, was it, did he come up in like 05 or 06?
Six.
And so I remember it was him, Jason.
Matt Kemp.
It was Worth, like Jason, yeah. Worth, Matt Kemp, Ethier, James Loney, Broxton, yeah. Billingsley, was it Jason Billingsley or
Chad Billingsley?
Chad Billingsley, yeah. And, God, I'm trying to think. Russell Martin was kind of around that time. I
mean, Blake, Indianola, Iowa.
But no, they had awesome prospects. But yeah, Ethier though is just, but he's been with the team forever through all those playoff runs, and so yeah, it was nice to see him get a little spotlight in the World Series there.
He has, I think he set the record for the most playoff games played with his final appearance.
Really?
Yeah, he had such a run, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, we went through it just, yeah, I mean, that was 14 years since 2004, so let's just say he's been in the playoffs 12, 13 times in his career.
Yeah.
And a couple of those years they went, you know, they made it to the NLCS, you know, they didn't lose in the first round every year. So
yeah,
you figure that's 20 playoff series times, you know, three game, you know. Yeah, so let's just assume 60 something, you know, or more.
Yeah. No, he had a solid run, but then the thing, like Corey Seager, he made the last out. He grounded out to right field because they had the shift on. And the people who are next to us, because our seats are like, we're the four seats from the aisle, we're in a little bit. And I told my wife, I was like, hey, when they make the final out, we're getting out of here. You know, we're not going to stick around for any of this crap. And as soon as the ball hit his glove, we were in the aisles, and it was, everybody in the stadium had the same idea. It was like a fire drill at Dodger Stadium. Wow. How quickly people want to get out. And I remember like grabbing Mark, and I'm like, just like put your head down, don't look. Like,
just follow the feet, follow the feet.
And I took a picture just from behind, like without even looking, and it was the Astros running onto the field, and you're just like, you know.
Yeah.
But then guy who's in front of us, Omar Ruiz, he's a reporter for the NFL Network. He stayed for the whole trophy ceremony and everything. So he was like live tweeting it. And I was like, dude, how can you do this?
Yeah. So, like, I don't need to see this.
Yeah. And I've never seen the parking lot so quiet, like walking out of the stadium. So, and that was like the really depressing part, was because our seats, they're on the level above the press box, right under the top deck. And if you look up, they had confetti cannons up there.
I remember you tweeting a picture of that.
And you're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be great. And then because traffic is so bad, my wife and I, after the games, would walk out of the stadium a little ways down Sunset and just catch an Uber from there. And all the cops who were on patrol for the potential riot that was going to break out were just standing around doing nothing. It was the most dumb thing ever.
Like, best overtime we've ever, easiest money.
Yeah, they're sitting there like playing like dominoes or something, or rolling dice for overtime money. But the cops are definitely not working. Like, everybody was too miserable to break stuff. So it was a bummer. So,
well,
because it was even, was it game two, leaving the stadium that night, people weren't mad because the Dodgers, you know, they showed a fight, the Dodgers showed a fight, came back, almost still pulled it out. So yeah, people were like, okay, we got a good series. Like, this is going to be a heavyweight match. And nobody left, like, people left disappointed, but nobody didn't feel like they didn't get their money's worth. So,
yeah, whereas game seven, you're like, well, we're going to be good for a while. We got a lot of young talent and a lot of,
yeah,
like the Carl Crawford pay, like the, just some of the horrible contracts that they've signed.
Yeah,
over
Carl Crawford is making $250,000 a month this year.
And so I think this is the last year of his contract, even though he hasn't
played. Yeah, he's put on some weight too.
He hasn't played in 3 years. In fact, there was an article I read based on the fact that he hasn't done anything in 3 years except for go to the mailbox and pick up that check from the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Carl
Crawford was a Nebraska recruit. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
He was a quarterback recruit and would have been there for 98, 99, like the Eric Crouch era. It was supposed to be a battle between Eric Crouch and Carl Crawford for the quarterback spot. And when the Rays drafted him, the signing bonus he got, you know, they give him a nice chunk of change, and Turner Gill, who had been recruiting him, former KU football coach.
And Nebraska quarterback.
He told Carl to take care of his family and just take the money. He's like, there's no reason for you to not take the money.
Yeah, I think, was he the first overall pick, like the number one?
The number one pick, and I think he got like a $3 to $5 million signing bonus. So they're like, just take the money, like, take care of your family.
Was back when they were, and then I think it was Josh Hamilton the year after that, or the one of the years following. And so, but next year, I mean, the Dodgers are going to be good for a long time, and as they have been for a long time. It's just, about getting hot right at the right moment. And as far as the division goes, I mean, the Stanton stuff, that'll, you know, determine if, I think, you know, the Giants getting Bumgarner back, if they get Stanton, you know, all of a sudden they're in contention.
Yeah, that'll be fun. It's better when the Giants are good.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely.
It makes the rivalry more fun.
Padres are just helpless. Like, they're awful for forever. Rockies are decent. And, you know, so is Arizona. So, you know, next year definitely will be another battle. Probably the same outcome where you get two wild card teams from the, you know, the West. I mean, I guess it's a long season. We'll see. But on paper, it seems like it certainly could happen.
Yeah, no, they bring in every, like, really, they're only, people are losing. Chase Utley's a free agent. I don't see him coming back just age-wise.
Yeah.
Puig still has one more year. Kershaw, we got Ryu. Darvish, they might sign him, might not. But Darvish really enjoyed his time in L.A., and this guy tried, you know? It's like, so he got shot. He put in the effort. And Alex Wood's still under team control. Rich Hill. And then what's crazy, though, with the Dodgers is you got Cody Bellinger, Corey Seager, Jack Peterson, Austin Barnes, Chris Taylor. All these guys are like the core of their team are all just still under team control, like just getting arbitration eligible.
And they get Andrew Tolles back next year.
Yeah, I love that dude.
And
I saw some Instagram videos of him doing some deadlifts, and it's like, yeah, his knee's better.
I know a little bit. Could you just give a little breakdown for the listener about Tolles? Because at one point he had quit baseball, correct?
Yeah, he quit. He was originally drafted by Tennessee, had some issues there, and then quit, and then
played college baseball at Tennessee.
He played college baseball at Tennessee, played for like a year or two, and then went pro. And he was signed by the Devil Rays, or the Rays, sorry, I didn't mean to drop the devil in there.
How dare you.
Can't see devil anymore. But Andrew Friedman, who was the GM then, and he had some other things. Like, I don't know if he had, like, it's always been kind of cryptic, whether it was off-field issues or behavioral stuff. But then he was out of baseball, working at a grocery store. This was going into the 2016 season. He's spending his off-season stocking shelves at a grocery store.
He went the Kurt Warner route then, huh?
Yeah. Throwing paper towels down the aisles, like running some routes. But he, Andrew Friedman called him up. He's like, hey, dude, do you want to give it another shot? Andrew Tolles in 2016 started in A-ball in Rancho Cucamonga playing for the Quakes. By August, he was with the Dodgers. And just, dude's just a spark plug. Great contact hitter, good power. Okay on defense. His fielding's a little shaky, but The guy just, he's at the right place at the right time when it comes to getting hits. And at the start of this year, it was Kenta Maeda, who, by the way, lights out as a setup man. He had a no-hitter going, and Tolles made this diving attempt down in the left field corner and ended up tearing his ACL. This is back in May, so he's just out for the year. But he's going to be, it's basically the Dodgers between Andrew Tolles and Julio Urias, who's out with shoulder surgery. They're going to, like, upgrade their team just with injured players coming back.
Do you expect, like, Rich Hill to have another season like this? Or you know what I mean? Like, is that – you think everyone's, you know, didn't really play above what they're really capable of doing? Or do you feel like it's all legit?
I think Rich Hill, like – because he's – sorry, I'm going to kick my desk. He's 36, 37. He's got two more years left on his contract. I think next year we're going to expect the same Rich Hill in his final year, and he's like 38. Might be a little suspect, but it'll be interesting how he did, because he went, because his curveball, which is his money pitch, wasn't working as well this year. So he went back to like, he almost went the Greg Maddux route of like, okay, I'm going to throw you 88 mile an hour fastballs, but put them in the right spot where you can't hit them. And that's where he was good there. And I just think, gosh, with him, it's like, I think he's earned a longer leash the next time they get in the playoffs. Because Dave Roberts pulled him like after the fourth inning both times.
Yeah, it was weird.
Didn't do anything shaky.
I mean, I really had Dave Roberts back, but he just changed his style so much during the playoffs, or during the World Series especially, like pulling everyone early and taxing the bullpen, which is a good bullpen, but like really taxing the bullpen to the point where people are just like, why is Jansen pitched 14 innings? There's only been three games.
Yeah, no, that was game two of the World Series where it was like, okay, you're down to Brandon McCarthy in the bullpen. Like, that's it, you know?
Way to go.
He was doing, between Tony Cingrani and Tony Watson, like, he was bringing those guys for one batter at a time.
Yeah.
And, like, Dave even did a couple of things, too, where he'd bring in, I think it was Cingrani, he did it to him once, where it was like, came in and get the final out of an inning, comes up, gets pulled for the next inning. It's like, what are you doing? So you just wasted a pinch hitter for a guy for one pitch, basically. So, but no, it was, he's got a good philosophy, but a cousin of mine who played college baseball and is a big Brewers fan, he was texting me during the World Series, just livid stuff. And I said, it's kind of the old school, like pre sabermetrics kind of stuff. But I'm like, no, what they're doing here is this. And I'm trying to justify it. And, you know, I kind of won him over on a few things. Like, no, Dave's bringing the pitcher in now because he's not letting people get on base. It's the, you know, they're not putting out, you know, the relief, the bullpen's not to put out fires. The bullpen's to, like, not let fires happen. But he was livid in game seven of the World Series when Kershaw went up to bat. And, like, I think it was, like, the fifth inning he was still pitching. He's like, why aren't they pulling him? They need a pinch hitter. It's like, no, they need Kershaw to pitch, you know? So.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, because he did, what, four scoreless, I think, in the...
Yeah, that was the time that, like, Dave Roberts was dead to him. Was that he left Kershaw in the hit. It's like, well, Kershaw is an okay hitter, and he can give it to another inning or two. You need that guy to pitch, so... It's like, you need Bruns. Like, he was just... Yeah, it was funny just seeing how mad he was. So they, like, texted me, I said, sorry, I was so upset. I just couldn't believe he was doing that, you know? He's like... So, it was funny.
Well, as far as the offseason goes, are the Dodgers expected to sign any, you think, possibly Stanton? Is there room for him? Or
well, Stanton, everything about Stanton says that, because he's got the no-trade clause, and he's pretty serious in using it, and he wants to sign with the Dodgers, but the rub is that the Marlins want whoever signs him to take on his contract, and they're not going to be like the Dodgers, they're like, trade Matt Kemp to the Padres, be like, yeah, we'll pay his contract, whatever. Like, we don't care.
Yeah. Right. And, we need.
So it'd be interesting to see what the Dodgers, if they worked out a deal that way, what they would get. And then I read somewhere this week that Jeter told Stanton basically, like, look, like, if you don't want to get traded, we're going to get rid of everybody. You're going to play on a shitty team for 5 years or however long it takes to rebuild. So think about that. I'm really excited about the Japanese guy Shuhei Ohtani. Have you seen him?
Yeah, that's real interesting too, because that's a guy you don't have to pull if he's pitching. He loves batting and, you know, has power.
Yeah, he is in LA to meet with the Dodgers. Though, like, Japanese TMZ greeted him at the airport the other night, and he really wants to play with the Dodgers. It sounds like so that would be incredible if they pulled that off, because he's given up a ton of money to go pro early. He's almost like the Japanese, like Zach Greinke. So he doesn't care about money.
And if he would wait, because he's under the age, I think it's 25, but if he had waited until he was 25, then he'd be eligible for a $200 million contract.
Yeah, but he doesn't care. He's like, oh, I'll take my little signing bonus. And apparently, though, when he plays on the Ham Fighters in Japan, he just lives in the team dormitory, doesn't go out at night. He's like a monk. And the big thing that I saw was that he just really wants to see what he can do in the majors and doesn't want to wait any longer than he has to. So I think that's just going to be pretty awesome if they get him, you know? So it's like, he might be playing left field a couple games a week and then pitching. And because in Japan though, it's their schedule is really structured. The league is so small. So it's, they have every team's off Mondays. And they, so
that's Ohtani, right.
He play in the field Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or DH or whatever, and then take Thursday and Friday off to prepare for pitching on Saturday. Or no, he pitched Sunday. So he played Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday off, pitch Sunday. And then, so he had a good little thing worked out. But that guy can rake. I love watching his YouTube videos.
Well, you know, as 23, you know, you're back when everyone's 23, you could fall down a flight of stairs and bounce back up and be just fine. You know, so I feel like his body's probably fairly durable for, at least 5-6 more years. But ultimately, it depends on how good of a pitcher he becomes. Because if he's as good as everyone says he is, then people aren't going to want to take that risk of him getting hit by pitches or, like, you know, diving for a ball in the outfield.
Yeah, he's like a regular Steve Nebraska. He throws 100 miles an hour. So
that's crazy.
Back to that Brendan Fraser movie. You remember that? What was that one called? The Prospect or whatever? Do you remember that one?
You know what? I want to say I vaguly do, but if I want to say it came out like 97, 98, something
like
that.
Peak Brendan Fraser when he was still like, I think it was pre-Mummy Brendan Fraser.
Okay.
So like post-Encino Man, and he was just a dude playing in the Mexican League who just raked and pitched through 100 miles an hour. It was a scout. That's what it's called.
Albert Brooks, the scout.
And he signed with the Yankees. You know, that was a big thing of like getting him to the Yankees for a tryout. So. And I always liked it that his name is Steve Nebraska. So it's good to get a little Johnny Utah there. But the Dodgers signed Pat Vendetti this week.
The lefty
pitcher.
Righty. Yeah, that's
from
right.
From Omaha, yeah. So.
Then he actually got – he broke in with the A's a little bit, right? He has pitched at the big league level.
Yeah, he pitched for the A's and I think maybe the Red Sox, but he's definitely in the Red Sox organization. But he had some injury issues, which is funny that they put him on the DL because it's like, just use your other arm. But that's like for Andrew Friedman and Farhan Zaidi, the GM of the Dodgers. Like, he's their dream pitcher. He's like, oh, we got this guy, both arms, and he has a good ground ball rate. You know, he'd be right in their wheelhouse for dream pitchers.
Well, the sky's certainly the limit with the Dodgers, with the open payroll coming up here in the next couple of years, and a lot of young players that are on the cheap that are under contract for several more seasons to come.
Kershaw can walk after next year, so he's got the option year.
But he won't. So. He loves pitching for the Dodgers. It's not like, I mean, was he going to go back and pitch for the Rangers? No.
That's what people are, because he's such like a family guy and is, you know, from Dallas and everything. But that's the thing that. It's like it's 200 degrees in Texas, and it's a crappy park to pitch in. It's like be a Dodger for life. So I think they'll definitely make the full court press on him. So
I mean, maybe in a couple of years. I know there's already talk about them getting a new stadium, even though the ballpark in Arlington's like 20 years old, even though it's not called that anymore. But I mean, that's what's weird when you can remember a park opening up and now they're already tearing it down. You're like, wasn't that just like 20? I mean, I guess it's been 20 years, but come on. Really?
Yeah. Turner Field, you know?
Right.
What else? I think there's been another one too, right? Turner Field. And then, no, that's been it. Take that back. Everything else has been new, but Dodger Stadium, third oldest in the majors.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful park. Todd, again, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate the insight, and that's thebigredfury.com just Big Red Fury, that's BIGREDFURY.com, BigRedFury.com, Twitter at the Munson, when the article's up, we'll retweet it, and listeners, you can, like I said, get a little bit more in depth, and
you can learn all about the agony.
feel the pain. But thanks for your time, and
dude, for sure, it was a blast, a lot of fun.
We let's talk Nebraska basketball soon.
Oh yeah, dude, they play KU this year.
good luck.
Might have to meet up for that game. It'll be a revisit of the glory days of the Big Eight.
Oh yeah, that'd be we might have to do that, but. All right, man, you be good. We'll talk soon.
Okay, sounds good. Everything about you is a mystery. I can hear the things that you keep inside. You're telling me the secrets you just can't hide. Tell me that you want me. Tell me that you need me.
Todd, thank you so much again for your time. Listeners, BigRedFury.com, at The Munson on Twitter. Longtime friend and just a sports fan. And we may or may not attend some basketball games this Friday down at Staples Center. It's like $30 and you get three college basketball games. So we may or may not do that. But I am, though. I'm going Wednesday, Clippers game against the T-Wolves. I just want to go see Wiggins. You know, maybe he goes off for 36 points, one of those. But this was what sealed it. $6 tickets, Clippers. I looked at the Lakers. You can get cheap Lakers tickets for $20, but $6. I upgraded and got center court for $9.75 per ticket. Prepaid parking, $6.75. It's incredible. I didn't realize how cheap the games were. I'm going to actually just... I said, screw it. I might as well go to 5-6 games this year if it's going to cost me $30 to go. I mean, just to see the talent, get to know... I don't really know the NBA that well, so I figure see it in person. Because, you know, I'm the guy that'll get the program and just start researching the players, get to know them a little bit better. And just, you know, again, see Wiggins. The Clippers are just back to the Clippers. And so I can afford to go to the games. But, again, Todd, thanks for coming on. Maybe we go to a Clippers game sometime. Maybe we splurge and get lower deck for $20. You know, something to think about. Also, guys, I wanted to remind you that the Hillbenders, who you heard coming out of that break, they're going to be touring around the country next year. So if you're in Arizona or California, January and February, they're going to be Utah, Kentucky, and North Carolina. Be sure and raise up. Take your shirt off and raise it around your head like a helicopter. In March, they will also be in Illinois. April in New Jersey. So if you like that song, go see them live. Go to hillbenders.com. They've got a bunch of other awesome songs. So check that out. And so we're going to have on Davey Wester here, who, as you guys know, I have toured with extensively over the years up and through Oregon, Washington, all around the Northwest, and in the Midwest also. It's based right now in the Twin Cities, but I caught up with them. He was back in Washington gearing up for a run of shows, which we'll get into. So we'll go on break again. I'm going to remind you again, where are you eating in Southern California? Eat a burrito, Don Carlo Shop. Taco Shop. Go to regrained.com. I'm getting ahead of myself. Regrained.com and get some delicious, I'm going to call them candy bars, but they're good. So check that out. All right. When we get back, Davey Wester.
On a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
And his mama cries. 'Cause if there's one thing that she don't need is another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
Now people, don't you understand? The child needs a helping hand. He'll grow to be an angry young man someday. But take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Or do we simply turn our heads and look the other way? Well, the world turns.
All right, we are back, and we have a reoccurring guest, a good friend of mine, great friend of the show, Washington native, Davey Wester, comedian extraordinaire. Welcome back.
Yeah.
How are you doing, man? It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm up here in Seattle. Watch the Seahawks
crushed the Philadelphia Phillies. The Phillies, yeah.
They're that good. They just threw bats. They're actually going to play for – I mean, how much worse –
Well, it looked like John Kirk was playing quarterback last night. I mean, just, you know, Carson Wentz, who I liked, because he's from North Dakota. So why
would that matter if he's from North Dakota, if you would like him?
Well, he's a small town boy.
Okay, So there's a small town bond between the two of you guys.
Yeah, dude. And we're both highly recruited out of high school.
And listeners, Davey is from I'm gonna get it right. Ephrata, right?
Yeah, Ephrata. Yeah.
Not Ephrata. Ephrata, Washington, about 3.5-4 hours east of Seattle, on the eastern side of the state, where there are no mountains, where it is barren, rocky. Really, you're not able to grow a lot of crops. Really don't grow there.
No, we got a lot of crops, dude. Potatoes.
Yeah.
We got a lot of potatoes.
That's right. That's where we get our French fries. So without Ephrata and the surrounding Soap Lakes and all the other beautiful cities that are in that part of the state.
And airbags, exploding airbags. We make exploding airbags over there, too.
There you go. There you go. Now that I've got you on, I wanted to talk a little Mike Leach, your favorite. Davey's a Washington State diehard, Drew Bledsoe, Ryan Leaf fan. But you're tired of Mike Leach.
I have two teams. My Washington State team, which is my number one, but I also was a fan of the Tennessee Vols, which was just totally craziness.
Which I've known you. I've known you for 13, 14 years. I've never once heard you mention that you're a Tennessee Vols fan. I just wanted to put that out there. I don't know where that
I was a big like Travis Henry fan as a kid, and then I liked Fearless Bryce, and this is before.
I was a Dale Carter guy. That's a Tennessee legend right there. Dale Carter, yeah. Kansas City legend-ish.
And then who else? I was a Heath Shuler fan, number 21.
Right. Can't forget Heath Shuler. Where's he at? Yeah. Why is he not in consideration for the head coaching position?
Because he's busy. He's in the House of Representatives. He's a congressman.
So briefly, you thought Mike Leach was gone and headed to Tennessee, and obviously that.
I'd rather go 6-6 and run the ball and be like a Wisconsin or an Iowa, than have an inflated win record of 9-3,
or 11-1 if you're Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I'd rather Wisconsin, they still can compete with Ohio. If Ohio State was playing Washington State, Washington State would lose 55-10. Well, I mean, let's just be honest, because it's just we get the same athletes as Wisconsin though too, because we have similar but they have a bigger stadium and all that stuff. But we have
much better, more established program. And Pullman, for those of you listening, if you don't know where it is, just throw a dart anywhere at North America, and more than likely it'll land in the middle of nowhere. And that's where you could kind of place Pullman at, is kind of in the middle of nowhere, southeastern Washington, western Idaho, northern Oregon kind of corner.
Yeah, it borders Moscow, Idaho. It's about,
they're communist over there. Is he coming back? Is Coach Leach heading back to Washington State, or what's the deal with that?
I don't see the Tennessee job. I could have seen him taking, which would have been I would have been twice as miserable. I don't know. He's just it's hard to. I'm grateful for what the program is, but I mean. I guess I always like, I'm not a Husky fan, but I always liked Coach Peterson over at when he was at Boise State, because he runs the ball, he plays I don't know, as a fan, I like that physical style football. You know, the air raid isn't something new where, you know, you throw right. 55 times and 10 of them are screaming. I mean, they're good at it. Don't get me wrong.
You've been watching it for years. And I looked up, apparently Mike Leach is still coaching in the Holiday Bowl against Michigan State. And then one of the wide receivers, I guess, leaked accidentally that Mike Leach was he claims that Mike Leach was denied a release. So I don't know. There's nothing that says.
Oh, Isaiah Washington. Yeah. Isaiah Washington. Yeah. He wanted to transfer. Know about that.
Yeah. So Mike Leach, he's just a grumpy old man. That's hilarious. I mean, listeners, you remember last week, with the wedding, the marriage advice, that's what we played. We had that clip on last week's episode, which was awesome. Oh. Real quick, listeners, if you are in the Pacific Northwest, Davey will be performing his always funny stand-up comedy. Davey and I have performed on the road together. I mean, it's getting close to 100 times. I mean, up and down the West Coast and all around the Midwest several times. And again, actually, this May, we're going to be back back-to-back weekends at the Blue Room in Springfield, Missouri. But if you're in the Northwest, go ahead and head on out to... Let's see, get this thing going right here. Angel of the Winds Casino on December 7th.
Murphy's Tavern in West Seattle, I think. Or Murphy's Winery, come down to that, because that's going to be a dope show. Murphy's Winery.
Where is that? And that's on the 6th?
That's on that's the 15th.
Okay.
And that's a dope little room.
What city is that in?
That's in Seattle.
Okay.
Like West Seattle. Just have to type in Murphy's Winery.
Okay. All right. Well, sweet. I'll run down the list here real quick. You got the Angel of the Winds, December 7th. That's in Arlington, about an hour north of Seattle if you're up in that area. Index Washington on December 9th, a little bit east of Seattle. You got the Ambassador Winery in Woodinville. That's like on the east, southeast side, December 13th. December 14th at the Hawk's Nest in Seattle, Washington. The 15th at Murphy's Winery in Seattle. And the 16th at Club Crow in Cashmere, Washington. Just east of Leavenworth, about an hour and a half east of Washington. Actually, great, great area of the state. So if you're in any of those areas... I don't give a shit if you're in Wenatchee. Drive into Cashmere. It's only an hour. But it's definitely worth checking out. You can go to DaveyWester.com. That's DaveyWester.com. And we'll retweet some of the links on our Twitter and Instagram, that sort of stuff, too. But
if you come to like a couple of shows, I might have Josh Nassar shave my chest. So... on stage. I don't know.
Yeah, why not? We'll see. I mean, you better put that live on Facebook if that's what you if that's what you
decide
to do.
And I will be live. Stay tuned. There will be a video about the half-naked baristas in Seattle.
That's on you. You need to just film that yourself while you're up there. Because, yeah. I mean, I don't know the next time I'll be up there with you.
I'm going to film that. I'm telling them. I'm telling them to stay tuned for me to film it. All right, mister?
Nice.
Hey. I'm going to be like Mike Wallace of the baristas. I'm going to expose misogynistic coffee places.
I was going to ask, anything crazy happened to you this week before we get out of here?
No, nothing really. I mean, the Seahawks crushed the Eagles. That's all that matters right now. I don't think anything crazy happened. I mean, I made it on the plane. I don't know.
Nice. It was a smooth flight. Everything was good.
Yeah, it's always a smooth flight if you don't crash into the land.
Now, when was the last time you were in Washington? It's been a year or so, right?
It's about 2 years, yeah. It's weird being back here. It's weird. I forgot. It's weird seeing no Viking jerseys and all Seahawks stuff. I talked to 10 o'clock Johnny. He assumed that since I live in Minnesota, he's like, your Vikings are doing good. I'm like, I'm not a Vikings fan and I never will be. So, that'd be interesting. to see if the Seahawks somehow pulled together six wins or something like that and ended up at the Super Bowl, then everybody will hate the state of Washington and Minnesota. So,
well, I mean, they're one play away from being a two-time Super Bowl champion. I mean, which over the course of three...
What is going on with your Chiefs? Did they get crushed yesterday?
I wouldn't... They didn't get crushed, but they lost to the Jets. Yeah, no one really knows what's going on, and the game was not on TV out here, and I don't have the $500 NFL package, so I was not able to... Not able to watch that, unfortunately. But just a lot of frustration. Just a lot of frustration, is put simply. A lot of people want the rookie Mahomes quarterbacking instead of Alex Smith, which I don't. I mean, it's an option, but it's not a good option. It's the defense, everything.
Just let him sit. I mean, Alex Smith can't play middle linebacker, you know, or corner, and not like, you know, Kareem Hunt, he had a good four game stretch, but he's not.
It turns out he is a third round pick out of Toledo.
And the Chargers are tied with you.
And the Raiders. So it's going to be a good AFC end of the season. Yeah, it's a three way tie right now. Also, too, real quick, I just wanted to let you know that Wednesday I'm going to the Timberwolves-Clippers game here in L.A. I splurged $6 tickets to go to the game. That's how bad the Clippers are. $6.
You splurged
$6. $6. I upgraded and got center court, lower, upper deck for $9.75. And then
$9.75.
Bought a parking pass for, I believe, $6.50. But
that's how bad now we're going back to the old Clipper prices now.
It's great. It's like the Chris Kaman years, the Baron Davis Chris Kaman years, back when they would like be an 8 seed, and then someone would either would get hurt or both. I mean, back in the Sean Livingston played for 10 games or something like that for the Clippers. That's what happened is I was joking about how bad the Clippers are again. And I was like, oh, they're probably affordable now. I could probably afford to go to a game again. And then I looked and it's like $6. Yeah, I guess I should be going to these games every week if they're $6.
It's cheaper than a movie.
I just went to a movie last week. I saw the Blade Runner 2049, which was probably with the tickets and food. I mean, I think it was like $60 at least, if not more. And that movie was probably a lot more entertaining than a Clippers game, honestly. But I just want to go see Wiggins, and that's the main reason. But no, it should be good. I'll let you know how that turns out. But listeners, again, go to DaveyWester.com. You can follow him on Twitter at DaveyWester1, and then on Instagram, I think it's just, is it just Davey Wester?
12.
Davey Wester 12 on Instagram. Davey, dude, thanks for coming on, and enjoy your time up in the Washington area. And listeners, if you're not up there, if you got friends up there, send them an invite. Tell them to go laugh their ass off. Because after the show, they're going to be like, what was that I just saw? This guy's crazy and hilarious. Here's $20. Give me a T-shirt.
Yeah, and go Hawks. All right? Everybody.
Go Hawks. And I'm going to assume you're talking about the Iowa Hawkeyes basketball. Thank you.
No.
All right, Davey, thank you so much, and we'll probably have him back on to talk Gonzaga basketball. It's weird, like the Tennessee thing. Excuse me, I'm taking a drink. He dropped a, oh, I'm a Vols fan. Really? I honestly, Davey, I've never heard you mention I don't think the word Tennessee in the 13 years that I've known you. So I don't know about the. I'm gonna have to call your bluff. I'm gonna call a bluff on the Tennessee thing. Also, I also wanted to mention that Matt Davidson. So during the Todd Monson thing, you know, we talked about Scott Frost, the Matt Davidson, Missouri. See, I'm the Missouri, Kansas guy. So my parents, my mom grew up in Columbia, Missouri. My grandfather used to work as a booster slash worked at the football games type of a guy, but was around. My aunt was the first female to get an athletic scholarship for volleyball or for any sports, but it was in volleyball and grew up going to Columbia several times a year. Great town, lived there on the outskirts in and about for about a year and a half. But dad went there, but I grew up on the Kansas side of the state line of Kansas City from the age of, fifth grade on. And so this was an area where when March Madness happens, school stops and they wheel a TV in and you watch basketball games instead of studying, history in fifth grade, type of a place. So loved KU basketball, but am a big fan of MU football. And so when this Matt Davids, I vividly remember the kick. And Missouri had what year was it? Missouri was only at the time, I think, 5 or 6 years removed from that fifth down against Colorado at the goal. So they'd just been getting hosed. And the Missouri football program at that time, not that it's elite by any means now, but back then it was awful. I mean, this was before. I think the Matt Davids, I think the kick, this kick game, and so it's Frost throws the ball and it's about to hit the ground and Davidson kicks it, or it gets kicked up and then Davidson swoops in and catches it. Well, Davidson's now the assistant AD for football at Nebraska, so he's just in charge of the football program. So there, again, great connection. Another Frost to Davidson connection there. But that was, it was freaking devastating. I mean, I think Brock Olivo might have been on Missouri's team at that time. I mean, this was before you had maybe Corby Jones was the. It's 20 years ago, but it was definitely before your Justin Smith, Brad Smith era, which, Missouri's had a nice run over the Pinkel years were fantastic. I lived in Columbia, I think, during his second or third season, and I think it was 2002 or three. And they were competitive every year. He built a nice, steady program. They transitioned well into the SEC. I can't hate on Missouri. I completely forgot where I was going with all of this. But ultimately, I'm the rare breed of. Oh no! Now I remember the Matt Davids. Yeah, so I'm the rare breed of the state line. Kansas basketball, Missouri football, and basketball. I like Missouri basketball. They're just so awful. But anyway, the Matt Davidson thing, that's right. That's where I was going full circle. He's now the king of football with Scott Frost at Nebraska. So, Todd, congratulations. I wish nothing but the best for you guys. I'm sure Iowa fans are shaking in their boots now. As far as the Dodgers stuff goes, I was excited and I almost shelled out $350 to go to the World Series. I did not do that. Would have been $1,000 because myself, my wife, parking, food, living it up at the game. It's like you're there. You might as well get three nachos if you want nachos, but it definitely sucked losing in game 7. And I'm definitely looking forward to going to some more games next season. And like I said, maybe these college basketball games this weekend at Staples. All right, guys, I think about done. As far as shows for me, just kind of SoCal, LA stuff. I am going to be back at the Blue Room in Springfield, Missouri in May, second week. I think it's the 12th, like 10th, 11th, 12th, something like that. And then actually Davey is going to be there the following week. He's going to feature for me. And then the third week, Davey's actually headlining. So if you want to see them, if you're in Missouri, that area, by all means, come out and check it out. But guys, that's it. Episode 154 is complete. Thank you for listening. Please go just write a review on iTunes. That helps, you know, through the search engines and all that stuff. I'm just trying to get listenership back to where it was about a year ago when we were getting about 2,000 to 3,000 listeners per episode. So we lost about 1,000 of you, but we're getting a few of you back week by week. Hey, and thanks for listening on the drive to work and the drive back. I know you do it for the kids. Remember that. You're doing it for the kids. It doesn't suck that bad. It's a lot better than your grandfather's job. Remember that. Remember that. God bless. Stay obsessed.
My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What am I doing? Touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know you can't touch this. Look at my eyes, man. You can't touch this. Yo, let me bust the funky lyrics. Touch this. Fresh new kicks and bands. You got it like that. Now you know you wanna dance. So move out of your seat and get a fly girl and catch this beat while it's rolling. Hold on, pump a little bit and let the noise go on like that. Like that. Touch this. Why you standing there, man? You can't touch this. Yo, sound the bell. School is in, sucker. You can't touch this. Give me a song, a rhythm, making them sweat. That's what I'm giving them now. They know. You talk about the hammer, you're talking about a show that's hyped and tight. Singles are sweating so fast, I'm a white boy tape. To learn what it's gonna take in the 90s to burn the charts. Legit. Either work hard or you might as well quit. That's word, because you know you can't touch this. Can't touch this. Break it down. Stop. Hammer time. Go with the flow. It is said if you can't groove this, then you probably are dead. So wave your hands in the air. Bust a few moves. Run your fingers through your hair. This is it. For a winner. Dance to this. And you're going to get there. Touch this. Look, man, you can't touch this. You better get a hype, boy, cause you know you can't touch this. Ring the bell, school's back in. Break it down. Stop. Have a time. Touch this.